Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Joining us now on the program on the always busy and surprisingly unsponsored guest line, you hear him, of course, from 10 until 12 every day on this radio station on Greeny. You also see him on Get Up on ESPN. Mike Greenberg of ESPN Radio joining us. Mike, I appreciate the time, and my goal over the next couple of minutes is to get you to become the first ESPN personality to predict the Pacers in six. Can we get that done?
I don't know if I appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you. I think the series has the potential to be fascinating and fabulous. I don't. That isn't what I expect. But I will say I wouldn't be as surprised. I was quite surprised that the odds when they opened were what they were, as significantly favored toward the Knicks. And in fact, for it to be a shorter series, the ESPN Bet app, I believe, has the likeliest outcome of the series, Knicks in five. I don't see that at all. I think tonight the tone will be set. I think Indiana style will hurt the Knicks. The Knicks are incredibly shallow right now as far as their bench. Everybody is hurt. They're playing seven guys. I still favor the Knicks, but only minimally in the series.
To me, Mike, and this is what's fascinating about this series, Indiana clearly has more depth in terms of players that are contributing and can stay fresh. But New York has, and a handful of teams have this, New York has a guy that I call a get-the-hell-out-of-the-way guy, and I don't think Indiana does. I mean, I think when the game's on the line, Brunson is the kind of guy that come hell or high water, he is going to get that bucket. And I love Tyrese Halliburton, but he is not that guy yet, and Siakam has to be in specific operating areas. Do you agree with that assessment?
Probably, but I think that assumes that this comes down – that applies to me in the games – where it comes down to 4 minutes and it's tied. And the Knicks just finished a series where that was the case in all six of their games against the Sixers, and that led to the heroics from Maxey and Brunson late. Games don't have to come down to that. Games can easily come down to me, the biggest difference in this series is the stylistic one. And because I love the history of it so much, I mean, Knicks Pacers to me will always be the Davis brothers on one side, and you end up Oakley and Mason on the other side, and Reggie Miller and Patrick Ewing, and Larry Brown and Pat Riley, and those series in the 90s where both teams wanted to win the game 88-84. Now, the Pacers want to score in the 120s and the 130s. The Knicks still want to beat you 97-93. So who can dictate their style to the other? I think that, to me, is the most important factor in all of this, which is to say if the Pacers are able to not get – to me, the Pacers are going to have to defensive rebound because you can't run the break. You can't run fast. You can't play fast if you can't take care of your defensive boards. If the Pacers are able to do that and get the game played at some degree in their tempo – then I don't know if it matters if the Knicks have Jalen Brunson or Patrick Ewing or anybody else. That's not a style that is going to be suited well to the Knicks. So that may be a coaching thing more than anything. That may be Rick Carlisle against Tom Thibodeau. But one way or another, if the Pacers can get this game played at their pace, no pun intended, then I think that may be more important than anything Jalen Brunson can do.
ESPN's Mike Greenberg is our guest. Mike, you bring up the history aspect of it. For a lot of Knicks fans my age, which is, you know, very late 20s, early 30s, there hasn't been a level of playoff success remotely close to what those Patrick Ewing, John Starks, Pat Riley teams were when this series was at its apex. The Pacers, it would be the same if not for those two conference final appearances in the Paul George era against the Miami Heat. So from the younger Knicks fans perspective that does not know what it was like during those golden days when it was Hicks versus Knicks, what do you tell them and what is the atmosphere from that demographic going into a series like this that carries so much history?
Well, it's worth quickly pointing out that these teams also met when you're talking about the Paul George runs. They beat the Knicks one of those years in a second round series. I can still see Roy Hibbert blocking Carmelo Anthony going to the basket in that game six that Indiana won at home. The rivalry between the Knicks and the Pacers in the 90s was as good as basketball has ever been in my lifetime. So I'm not old enough to have watched Russell play against Wilt. People will point to Magic and Larry. They played each other in the finals, I want to say three times. And that's probably those are probably the two most famous rivalries in basketball history. As far as gritty, hating each other, drama like you wouldn't believe, incredibly close, evenly matched series. The Knicks and Pacers, I want to say, played each other five times in a seven-year period in the playoffs. I'm doing that from memory, but certainly in 94,
93, 95, 4, 5, 8, 9, and 2000. It's and unbelievable, 2000. Isn't it?
So, yeah. Every year, and every single one of them was decided by a play here or a play there. And some of the moments are some of the most famous moments ever. The Knicks fan will point to Larry Johnson's four-point play. The Pacer fan will point to Reggie Miller's final 8.9 seconds and the choke sign that he gave to Spike Lee and many others. Generally speaking, the Pacers had the better of it then. Both of them were sort of punching up at Michael's Bulls through that entire period. And then late in the 90s, the Heat came along when Pat Riley wound up there and sort of rounded out what was a big four in the Eastern Conference. But the East, for the majority of the 90s, was dominated by three big teams. Michael's Bulls, and generally speaking, they always won. And then the Pacers and Knicks, who were vying to be the ones who could get there when they didn't. And the Knicks beat the Pacers, and that Ewing had that huge Game 7, and they went to the final in 94 and lost in 7. And then the Pacers came back and beat them in 95, wound up losing to Orlando. But that actually turned out to be the last game and series that Pat Riley was with the Knicks. He then went to Miami. So there is so much incredibly significant history between these teams. And I was saying, I want them all in the building. I want to see everybody. I haven't looked this up. Is Reggie doing the game tonight on TNT?
I believe he is doing the TNT broadcast. Is he not, Eddie?
So that would make sense. So he'll be there. I want Ewing in the building. I want all those guys from those series in the building, as many of them are still around, and Anthony Mason is no longer with us. But those series, that was basketball at its best. Let's put it this way. They called a technical foul Saturday night, not to change the subject. For those who watched Anthony Edwards and his brilliant performance Saturday night when Minnesota beat Denver, they called a technical foul on Anthony Edwards for glaring too long at someone. There's not one player on the floor in the Knicks Pacers series in the 90s who would have finished a game. I mean, not a single game.
Right. Can you imagine the choke sign today, right? The choke sign today would be like ejection, right?
and of course, it's one of the greatest memories that fans of either side candidly have. Because what we want is drama, and that can come in a lot of different ways. It can come in some of the artistic beauty that we get sometimes from the Warriors, you know, in their heyday with, Steph and Clay and them. And it can just come from the grit and good old-fashioned honest dislike that frequently, in fact, that probably has been the best part of most sports history, has been that. And the Knicks and Pacers in the 90s personified that as much as anybody ever has.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Mike Greenberg is our guest. By the way, Reggie Miller on the call for Game 2, is my understanding. Not Game 1, but Game 2 on TNT.
Tonight.
But Mike, I wanted to go back to what you mentioned because, you know, that 94, you and I are of the same era, right? So we're on two different spectrums in those 90s, obviously, of the passionate interest level and the spectrum by which we're watching those series. But the two things that Knicks fans and Pacers fans both knew and maybe wanted to, like, not recognize but knew in 94 and 95 was there's your window because Jordan's hitting curveballs, right? And so it's like everybody forgot Olajuwon was still playing. But the 98 series to me, where the Pacers win in five, and then they go to Chicago and they take on the swan song era, Tony Kukoc, Pippen, Jordan, Bulls. It is my opinion, and I want yours because you covered those Bulls teams. That 98 Pacers team even though they went to the finals in 2000 and had the glory years with Reggie in the early years of the Pacers-Knicks rivalry, that 98 team to me was the best Pacers NBA team that they've had, and that was the best team to match up against Chicago and the closest of anybody that could rival what Chicago during their dynasty was able to put on the floor. You agree or disagree?
I do agree. You would know better than I would if they were better than the team that went to the final. I remember that game like it was yesterday, game seven of that series in 98. The Pacers had the lead most of the second half.
Yeah, and then
they were ahead most of that game.
Correct. Scottie Pippen fouled Mark Jackson 37 times in the fourth quarter of that game.
There's no call. Yeah,
that's right.
So I worked with Jalen for 15 years. And so we've had a million conversations about that series, about how close they were to beating Jordan. Look, I mean, just the numbers themselves. Jordan's teams never went to seven games in the finals. So immediately, no one in the NBA Finals played them as close as that. They went seven games in the East Final with the Knicks in 93. And I'm struggling to remember anybody else taking them seven games. So right there, the numbers 100% suggest that that was the closest that anybody came to beating Jordan during that entire run. They lost to Orlando when he came back and played 17 games wearing number 45. But in the six championship seasons, I'm doing this from memory, I'm probably forgetting one. I don't remember any other seven-game series.
I think that's
so
correct.
The 93 series against the Knicks, which the Knicks went ahead 2-0. That was the John Starks dunk game in game two. And then the Bulls won 3 and 4 at home. And then there was the Charles Smith game was game five. And then the Bulls won it. Oh, no, that only won six. I take it back. They won that in six because the Knicks had home court advantage. So Indiana, that might have been the only seven-game series that they wound up playing. I'm sure there's something along the way I'm forgetting. But that was a very long answer to a short question. Yes, I agree with you. That was the closest anybody came to beating Jordan in the 6 years that he wound up winning the championship.
What is the Mike Greenberg, our guest, in terms of the – I always – ask this to people outside of market, because I think, Mike, you know, we live in a snow globe, right? I mean, we live in an echo chamber in any variation of life. Oftentimes we can get caught up in that. And I'm always curious of what the outside market perspective is of the Pacers. Is this a team that is seen as a young, on the rise team, or is it one that is seen as, yeah, okay, I mean, they won a series against a depleted Milwaukee team, and they're as anonymous and as obscure as others that are still around in the league.
Well, I mean, I think the in-season tournament helped a little bit for well, I mean, the hardcore basketball fans know the answers to the question. As far as what I think you're asking me, which is, what is sort of the conventional wisdom? I'll give you two examples. One, I thought Halliburton, it was really a good coming-out party for him in the in-season tournament. I think people paid a lot of attention. But the answer to your question really would be this. The conventional wisdom, and I can even tell you that the Knicks fans at the Garden the last day of the regular season were begging the Knicks to lose so they would get Indiana in round one instead of having to play Philly. The conventional wisdom was, whoever is the 2 seed is going to wind up getting the Sixers, and that's worse. Everyone wanted to be 3 to play against Indiana. That obviously didn't work out for Milwaukee. I'm one who thought that the Pacers were going to win that series anyway, even if Giannis and Lillard had played. We'll never know. But I would say the conventional wisdom is, because of the first point you made, which is the Pacers don't have a true superstar, like someone who crosses over, went like they did when they had Paul George at his apex, or certainly when they had Reggie and those guys. And they haven't had any, like, a deep playoff run in particularly recent memory that has put these guys into the spotlight. So I would say, for the most part, most basketball fans don't know them that well, and that might be part of the reason why the Knicks are such a significant favorite. But this is their opportunity to change that completely. I was a big fan of Benedict Mathurin, by the way, and I know he's not a part of this now, but I feel like they've got some good – they've got a couple of young players with unusual names that no one knows anything about, who in the long run have a chance to wind up being very good players. This is an excellent chance in a spotlight series against the biggest market team of them all to show everybody, you showed up to watch the Knicks, but we're going to show you we are actually the better and more exciting team to watch. I mean, for basketball fans who, and I don't need to tell you or anyone listening to this conversation this, but a lot of basketball fans want to see games in the 120s, and that's obviously where the Pacers always play them.
By the way, for the sake of housekeeping, you were right the first go-round, Mike, in the back-to-back, first back-to-back for the Bulls, and they beat the Trailblazers on that path. They beat the Knicks in seven in 91-92, the only other team to take Jordan to seven at all.
That was the year before.
Correct.
Yeah, that
right.
was the year before I'm talking about. That's exactly right.
Yep.
That was when the Knicks were kind of young upstarts, and the Knicks won game one on the road of that series and put the Bulls in a situation where they were losing, where no one gave the Knicks a chance. And that was Riley's first year with the Knicks. That's exactly right. So I was right, but I was also wrong because I was thinking of the wrong year. It was 97. It was seven games was the previous year. And then the series I was thinking about where the Knicks had home court advantage was a six-game series.
When you look at Tyrese Halliburton and the takeoff platform he had during the in-season tournament and where he has been post-injury and now kind of rounding back into form, what do you see out of the young Pacers guard?
I love him. I mean, I think everybody loves him. He's I don't know why he doesn't have a chance to become one of the better players. Well, I don't know exactly how you put this. I wouldn't trade, Anthony Edwards or Luka for him. But I think he has a chance to be one of the, spotlight players in the NBA going forward. I mean, you guys see him, day in, day out, infinitely more than I do. But, I hosted the NBA shows the last couple of years, so I watched as many games as I possibly could. And I think he's terrific. I love the way he leads that. He seems like the perfect player for that offense. He seems to be constantly throwing 30-foot passes up the floor to guys who are, racing out in front of the pack. He's a good scorer. I don't know that he's, and again, you guys tell me because you see him every single day. I don't know that he's the dynamic scorer that some of the other young stars in the NBA are, but he looks to me like a player who could be a signature player, maybe the one of the two top players. See, the way I used to define greatness in the NBA, when I say used to, I mean up until about 3 weeks ago, was you needed to have three top-level players to be a championship contender. It's now become two. I think you need two. I think the days of the big three, and we saw what happened in Phoenix, those are over. You need two A-level players and then a bunch of other really good ones. I think Halliburton is going to be good enough to be one of those two. And you just need to get another one. And then you have a legitimate championship contender, which I don't think even the most, the most diehard unrealistic Pacer fan is looking at this team saying, oh, yeah, we're winning the title.
So what about Siakam?
Is Siakam good enough to be one of those two guys? I know he had that run with Toronto. That's an interesting. Do we think Siakam? How old is Siakam now?
Siakam's 31. See, that's Mike. That to me, that's the real juggling act here for Indiana because you get Siakam with the banking on being able to re-sign him, and I think that they feel they're going to be able to do that. But then, do timelines match up right? Because Halliburton's young, Siakam maybe has 3 to 4 left. You've got to hit it in that moment, right? Or else all of a sudden you're kind of back to square one. I look at Siakam and Halliburton both as really good scorers, but they are situational scorers, and I don't know that they're instinctive scorers. Like Edwards and Luka, when they get the ball, they're just going to score, right? And those guys kind of are thinking through how they're going to score. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean they're half a step down from the guys that you're talking about, but the guys you're talking about are probably the second and third best young players in the entire NBA behind Victor Wembanyama. So almost anyone's stars are going to not look as good as those in comparison. But if there's one thing that the league has shown us in recent years, as opposed to what it was for the longest time, I don't know that you have to necessarily have the single best player to win, although I guess Jokic is that now. It's a very good conversation. I think the combination of Halliburton and Siakam for the next 2 years has a chance to make you a very, very good team. And then the question is, what can we add around them to elevate this at least a little?
Bring back Paul George, Mike. They're going to bring back Paul George, right?
And is that's not a thing people are talking about, is it?
Well,
I know they're talking about him in Philly.
he keeps doing that podcast, Mike, and the fringe conversations, or that maybe a reunion. I don't know.
Mike, he told Tyrese Halliburton that seeing Halliburton's love from Indiana made him nostalgic. So guess what? There you go, right?
Well, it would be, look, that would be something else. He would be exactly what they need.
No question.
I don't know that I expect that. Like Brian Windhorst was on Get Up today, and he talked about how if the Clippers will give him the max, he will stay with the Clippers. If he doesn't, then you look for a team that can afford $50 million, and the Sixers are that. that would be a great addition. But if you look at the Knicks, so for the Pacers fans who haven't watched a lot of Knicks games this year, here's what you're going to see in the Knicks tonight. You're going to see one dynamic star in Jalen Brunson, and you're going to see a bunch of really good players who know their roles around him, are well-coached, play like crazy. They dive after every loose ball, and they get a big performance every night from someone different. One night it's Hart, and another night it's DiVincenzo, and another night it's going to be somebody else. They have multiple bigs who can play defense. That's what the Knicks are. They don't have two players better, to your point, than Halliburton and Siakam. Maybe they do when Julius Randle is healthy, but he's not. So, I mean, the Pacers are going to – the Pacer fans listening to this conversation are going to see a very well-coached, very methodical team that right now has no bench because they're all hurt. They're going to play seven guys. They're going to slow the pace, and they're going to try and beat you to death on the boards. And I don't know that the Pacers can't win this series.
Well, the counter to that, Mike, would be this. In Indiana, you're going to see – let's take Halliburton and Siakam. We've discussed that. But then you've got Miles Turner, who's active defensively. Jalen Smith, who, if called upon, can score in the low post in play defense. They probably give up a little bit there on the inside for sure with what New York is able to do. But then what Indiana has between Nesmith, Nimhard, TJ McConnell, you know, I think Indiana brings a greater depth of player that can score and run off the bench. So based on that, I'll go to my patented phrase here. Like, why not Indiana? When you look at it and you look at the depth that Indiana brings to the table and the fact that they are going to be able to run, I think, maybe not at the 120 pace, but the 110, 115 pace, doesn't that say, just based on numbers and attrition, advantage Indiana?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it does. I love that guy, Nesmith, and they have a bunch of different guys to run at Brunson. Because Nesmith is big, but I feel like you guys tell me again, you watch them every single day. Like, I feel like he's one of the many guys that are going to – the Philadelphia just played Brunson with Kelly Oubre, and, you know, a bunch of guys who were, you know, 6'7", 6'8", but athletic enough to try and stay in front of him at least a little and give him a hard time. There's no question the Pacers are deeper. Here to me is going to be the stat that winds up deciding the series. Do the Knicks dominate the offensive boards and get themselves a bunch of second chance opportunities? Because if you watch the series against the Sixers, if you watch them all year long, that's what they do. They've got Mitchell Robinson and Isaiah Hartenstein and a bunch of other guys who play like crazy. They crash everything in the offensive boards, the constant tip outs and all that kind of stuff. If they're able to do that and get a ton of extra possessions, that's demoralizing for the other team defensively. That's how the Knicks win. If the Pacers are, if this series is close to even on the boards, then the answer to the question, why not the Pacers, is there's no reason why not.
And
if the series is even on the boards, I think it's an even series.
I think Hart and DiVincenzo, who I love the way that they're able to shoot the ball, if they're able to shoot consistently and you have to draw Nesmith on one of those two, and not have him help on Brunson, and you put Nimhard on Brunson, that's probably advantage New York as well. If those guys are going, that free, and Brunson doesn't need a lot of help to be freed up, right? But that's going to help them.
Here's what I would say, and I used to say this about the Bulls teams I covered, and I would say this 100 times out of 100. I do not think that you start doubling and diving at Brunson in these games. Maybe not until the final, you know, 6 minutes of the fourth quarter. The way the Knicks beat you is if either Hart or DiVincenzo or both of them get hot. There are games that Josh Hart all season long did not shoot threes. like this. He had an unbelievable – he played out of his mind in that series against Philadelphia. He doesn't shoot like that. You don't want to let him get into a rhythm. DiVincenzo is a genuinely great three-point shooter, and you do not want to let him get hot. Let Brunson beat you. Let Brunson score 40 points but not get anybody else involved, because then late in the game you start diving people at him, you get the ball out of his hands, and now no one else wants to take a shot. The Knicks will win if Hart or DiVincenzo or both of them play great, any game in which they play great. They won't win any game in which neither of them plays great, and that is what I'd be trying to stop if I was Rick Carlisle.
Mike, does Indiana next year, and you know, whether it be this is the end of the road for them or they get to the Eastern Conference Finals, whatever it may be, but next season when Benedict Mathurin, who is a special talent and a good, promising young player, but now he has been sidelined with the shoulder injury during this kind of coming of age for this particular unit, is that going to be a challenge for them next year to find out how he merges back in with what they're doing?
I guess. But what is the status of him? He's the kid that everyone was telling me, you got to watch, you got to watch, you got to watch. I started watching, I fell in love with him, and then all of a sudden he's gone.
Yeah, he had a shoulder, I can't remember the exact cause of it, but he had a shoulder procedure, you know, 2 months ago that shelved him for the rest of the year. He is expected to be back at full strength next season.
Okay, so, I mean, look, I don't think any team gets worse adding really, really good players. So I don't. Will there be an adjustment period? Sure, but the regular season is 82 games long.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, that, if they're healthy, they have plenty of time to figure that out. You know, I mean, like KD and the guys in Phoenix were talking about not having any time together. I don't think those guys played more than like 15 games together this year. If you give Mathurin and Halliburton and Siakam and that whole group an entire season with a really good coach, which they have. That would be the again, observing from a distance, that would be the least of my concerns.
Lastly, Mike Greenberg, our guest. Of course, you hear him from 10 a.m. until noon every day on this radio station for Greeny on The Fan. It has been a number of years. I want to say a handful, maybe 10 years ago. They do kind of all run together for me as well. But this is May in Indianapolis. Pacers, Knicks is special to people. So too the Indianapolis 500. You have been to IMS, and you were able to take in that experience, correct?
Yes.
Thoughts on it?
I actually got to drive on the track. Not me driving, but so the first, I want to say it was the first or second year that we were doing Mike and Mike. We came and did the we came and did the show from there multiple years. We came and did the show from Indy for the Indy 500. I want to say 3 or 4 years. But one of them, the driver Scott Sharp.
Yep.
After the show, took us on the track, so me and Mike individually, so one at a time, in the pace car, and he drove me around the track for, I don't know, what felt like 10 years. It was probably like 6 minutes.
Right.
And I've never been more scared in my entire life. I couldn't believe it. He had us out. I mean, he's driving, and I'm in the passenger seat. If I had reached a finger out the window, I could have touched the wall on the right side when he was on that side. And when we get done, I literally, it was all I could do not to have peed all over myself in terror. And when we got done, I said to him, so is that what it's like driving in the race? And he said, yeah, only it's about, we go about 50 miles faster and there's 30 other cars on the track. And I said, okay. So that was when I realized just the extraordinary nature of it. That said, I've never been to the race. We came and did the shows from there, I want to say 3 or 4 years. And we were in Indy for a variety of other reasons as well. I mean, I was there for the Big Ten Championship game. I was there for the Super Bowl, whatever year that was, and all that sort of thing. Shout out to everybody at St. Elmo's. But I've never actually gone to the race itself. So I have an appreciation for what it's like to be on the track, racing around it at, I think we were like at 190 when Scott was driving me, but I've never been to take in the actual spectacle of all of those people in the stands.
Scott Sharp, by the way, was on pole 1 year and unfortunately hit the wall in turn one on lap one. So it's probably a good thing you weren't in the car with him then, right?
But I'm glad. Let's put it this way. If he had done that beforehand, I don't know that I would have gotten in. Like, that's not a very good sign.
But good dude. Really good dude. Connecticut. So from your neck of the woods, for sure. Mike Greenberg again. Tomorrow at 10 a.m., you will hear him talking about game number one between the Pacers and the Knicks amongst else, all the other things that are going on in the world of sports. But, Mike, appreciate it, certainly, and it is a nostalgic time. It's a fun time to go back to. I feel like I'm in college all over again and that I'm listening to the Freddie Jones Band or something because it's the 90s and it's Pacers next, but it's fun.
Yeah, it's great. It brings back great memories, and let's hope they write a few new really good chapters in the next 2 weeks.
Mike, we appreciate it. We'll be listening tomorrow.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me, fellas.
All right, Mike Greenberg, again, Greeny, 10 a.m. until noon each day here on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.